5. Kings Harbor Citadel, Helen Island, Howell Bay, Kingdom of Old Karas. From Baron Seamount's office window, looking down from the citadel across the anchorage, Admiral Rockpoint's flagship looked like a child's toy. Or, better, like a perfectly detailed model. HMS Destroyer lay to her anchor, awning spread above her decks against the sun's heat, and he saw one of her boats pulling steadily about her in a circle. Rockpoint recognized Captain Timothy Darris's barge, and his lips twitched on the edge of a smile. Darris loved his galleon, but he was never quite satisfied with her trim. He never missed the opportunity to study her when she lay still, considering whether he should shift ballast to bring her up an inch or two by the bow, or, conversely, to increase her draft forward. He shook his head, then turned back from the window to face Sir Alfred Hindrick. The Commodore sat behind his desk, in front of the expanse of chalk-covered slate with which he'd had his office paneled. As always, the diagrams and calculations sprawling across that slate, and the notes he'd jotted there to remind himself of various things, were fascinating, but Rockpoint kept his attention resolutely focused on the Baron himself. At the moment, another naval officer stood at one end of Seamount's desk. Commander Irvin Mondrain was about 8 years younger than Rockpoint himself, and thin as a ferret. In fact, even though he had only 4 limbs instead of 6, and black hair instead of a ferret's scaled hide, a ferret was what Mondrain had always reminded him of. He had that same almost frightening abundance of energy, and he was an equally relentless hunter. True, his quarry tended to be ideas, not spider rats, but once he got his teeth into his prey, there was no getting him to back off until he was victorious. That made him the almost perfect assistant for Seamount. Unfortunately, he was just as eager to get Seamount's concepts into service as the Commodore himself, which meant, "Brian, you coward," Rockpoint thought at the absent High Admiral. "Can't spare the time away from the fleet, my arse. The real reason you sent me to drop Regis off in Tellisburg instead of doing it yourself was that you didn't want to face Alfred, so you dumped it on me." He snorted. "Don't think I'm going to forget it either. Somehow, some way, you'll pay. Trust me, you'll pay."
"The High Admiral and I have read your reports with a great deal of interest, Alfred," he said now. "We've been impressed, as always, and," he nodded in Mondrain's direction, "with the Commander's contributions as well."
"Good, I'm glad to hear it," Seamount beamed, although Rockpoint had the impression he was even more pleased at having Mondrain singled out for praise.
"Dr. Macklin," Rockpoint glanced at the head of the Royal College, who'd accompanied him to Helen Island, "has been keeping us up to date on his own evaluation of your work as well. Of course, he's been more interested in placing what you're accomplishing in context with everything else than in individual specific ideas, but in some ways that's been even more useful."
This time, Seamount only nodded, and Rockpoint smiled and turned his attention to Mondrain.
"I was particularly struck by your conclusions from the artillery tests, Commander. I have to say that when Commodore Seamount first described your proposals to us, I hadn't realized just how exhaustive you intended to be."
Which, Rockpoint admitted to himself, was an understatement. He had no idea how many rounds Mondrain had fired off in his various tasks, but he knew it had to run to literally thousands of round shot and charges of grape, as well as over 100 of the new shells Seamount was about ready to put into production. The commander's tests had considered ballistics, differences in powder quality, the effectiveness of large, heavy shot compared to smaller, faster-moving shot, the effects of humidity, better carriage designs, ways to increase rate of fire, how many shots a given gun of a given weight was good for before the barrel simply wore out or broke,
how to prevent round shot from rusting, the best ways to store cartridges at sea, how far windage could be reduced before it reached a point at which fouling reduced the rate of fire. He'd even had life-size sections of hull built on land, sections of everything from a traditional galley to one of the Navy's schooners to standard merchantmen to the Navy's heaviest galleons, and then methodically blown them to bits, stopping after each discharge to examine and evaluate the damage that shot had inflicted. And instead of these straw-stuffed dummies which had been used in Seamount's original demonstration firings, Mondrain had hung sides of meat from cattle and hogs inside the targets to evaluate the wounding effects of the various combinations of ammunition. According to Merlin, no one had gotten around to conducting such exhaustive trials back on old Earth until artillery had been in service literally for centuries, and the amount of information the commander had accumulated was astounding.
"I have to admit, I'd already suspected that we were overgunning," he said now, "although it's good to have confirmation of it." He grimaced. "It would be even better if there were a quick fix, of course."
"I agree, sir." Mondrain's voice was a melodious tenor. "We actually need to give each of them about a foot more clearance on either side. As it is, we're too crowded for the maximum rate of fire. People are getting in each other's way. About a foot." He grimaced. "I know it doesn't sound like much, but..."
"Oh, I believe you." Rockpoint waved one hand. "In fact, the main reason I stuck with Gale as my flagship, all the way through the Armageddon Reef and Darko Sound campaigns, despite the fact that she mounted only 36 guns, was that her gunnery drill always seemed just a tiny bit sharper than anyone else's. Which, as your report points out, was probably because she had almost 13 feet of gun deck per gun, instead of 10.5 like Destroyer.